Yeah, it's cookies are, in a way, a crutch, right? We've been able to lean on cookies for a very, very long period of time as an industry, and sort of, it's kind of a life hack way to recommend content to users. And we just have to be better about how we create these scalable identity solutions and maintain the highest level of utility and user experience while doing it. And I think the industry is ready for it. Everyone seems to be kind of rowing in the same direction, and cookies have felt like an archaic technology for a long time, but no one has a better idea.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. With me today live to recording, I guess is the TV way of saying it, live from Vail, Colorado, Richard Marquez, Mike Cassetta from Rev Content. Guys, welcome, and I'm jealous.
Thanks, Nick. It's pretty nice here.
Yeah, we have a babbling brook behind us. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm in Kansas City, and we've got a little bit of the haze from the wildfires over here, so I bet your air is better right now than mine.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, you guys are at the Blox Digital Broadcast Summit. Blox Digital, my magnanimous sponsors of this show. They make all this possible. What's going on up there? You guys are talking broadcast, talking digital. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, this was a great idea. It was, the brainchild of the folks at Blox to bring out some broadcaster, locally owned, small and medium sized broadcast groups. Allen Media is here, Morgan Murphy, Draper Broadcasting, number of groups to just talk about the state of the industry and what we can do moving into the future here. And we jumped at the chance to be a co-sponsor along with STN Video. And so it's been great.
Sometimes it's good just to get everybody together and share some stories, but also just share what everyone is doing to keep up with the changing times and keep up with producing the best news they can.
The conversations have been very authentic and transparent. It's an intimate group, which I think is really beneficial. And it's not exclusively sort of sponsored content.
Yes, yeah, those small groups really help you kind of dig in sometimes and talk about whatever needs to be talked about, right? You don't feel like you have to guard yourself too much.
Yeah, and all of the content, it's not moderated for some sort of pay-to-play model. So you get a real sense of what the pain points, peaks and valleys, whatever you want to call it, is happening within the sort of industry on a more macro level, and then even specifically within broadcast and local.
Well, without overstepping your bounds in an intimate group, but what are the highlight topics? What are people in that broadcast news industry talking about? What are the things that are on everybody's minds?
Well, we've been talking a couple of different things. One, which has been great, recruiting. So, Tony Bangert brought in kind of a third party to help talk about how we can recruit great people and kind of always be recruiting for all of our companies, which was fantastic. AI has been a big topic. Video production, monetization, distribution has been a big topic. What else?
I think those are the two main ones. Yeah. AI is a very buzzy, obviously hot topic right now, but I think it should be. And one of the difficult sort of elements of AI is the practicality of it. It's one of these things where it can sort of in theory do anything, but it's only as good as kind of how the user prompts it and the level of education for the human being on one end of the AI sort of relationship, translating all of that knowledge into an organization and having it be part of sort of the zeitgeist of how people operate and understand that this technology is kind of coming one way or another. So use it in a way that can be self-advantageous to sort of work smarter, not harder. What does that even mean? That's what we're kind of just figuring out.
Right. I think it is the thing that everyone is most excited about and most frightened of at the same time.
For sure. And I think what's come out of this session over the last, few days is a lot of the fear and perhaps, misinformation is just, lack of knowledge and understanding. And so, what we tried to do in one of the sessions here is have, a couple of folks, Ethan Holland from Draper and Colin Benedict from Morgan Murphy, just show us what they're doing today with AI, some things that people hadn't seen at all. How to take a broadcast script and turn it into a web article, how to then take that web article and create a few tweets or SEO friendly headlines for it, and use it as a tool to kind of, maximize, what people are already doing in a newsroom, and create some efficiency. So I think just those actions alone dispelled a lot of myths and fears that we all have, right? That this is going to take over the planet and we're all going to lose our jobs and it's going to be terrible, right? And that's not the case. Sometimes these things can be super helpful.
Well, I think you kind of hit on what I think is one of the bigger pieces of that and one of the easier things. We've talked the last several episodes, digital first has kind of been like the theme through the last several episodes that we've done on this podcast. And I don't know that there is a better tool right now to help do that so that you can repurpose content that you're already collecting and tell it in different ways by punching into AI to help you generate a news story, a video script, social media posts, hashtags. I mean, like all of these things, right, that you can just use this tool to help you take one bit and make 20 bits.
100%. And, it's not that it's eliminating anybody's position. It's freeing up time for people in the newsroom to create more content, right? Which is what I think everybody really needs or would like more time to do, right? Instead of doing these kind of menial tasks. And, these tools are great brainstorming friends, right? It's like, give me five different types of tweets for this article that I just wrote. Give me four different SEO friendly headlines, right? Or give me a tease. Like somebody joked here that nobody writes tease as well, right? And so this is something I can do that for you on the fly and never get tired, right? So why not?
Right. And the fact that you can ask it to change the tone too, just really, really makes it. And it takes, I think that's the point too, is it takes time away. So instead of 2 hours or 3 hours to use your content in seven different ways, it takes you 10 minutes.
Yeah. I didn't realize that, Colin was showing us and Ethan was showing us how you can kind of take create like a personality, right? And say, so you start to train ChatGPT as a news director, right? Train it as an assignment editor, right? And give it these different roles as a sales manager. And so it sort of starts to learn from that and take on these different roles and go a whole nother level deeper than just, plugging something into a search box and hitting enter.
Right. And for those that get a little fearful of it taking away jobs or being too easy, doesn't take away the need for an editor. You still have to edit and read everything that it generates.
Yeah, the source content is still the most important, right? We're not asking these tools to create content. They're not going out and gathering the news for us. It's taking something that's already been written and perhaps, reformatting it for another output or for social media or whatever it might be. So no, it's not the source remains.
I think always will. Yeah, and I think content and audiences, there's so much fragmentation on where and how information is accessed. And, removing AI as a tool in the sort of weapons arsenal, having to manually curate content that's being written to be as appropriate as possible and as effective as possible for each of these fragmented channels, that's a daunting and really inefficient use of a person or a team's use of time, and being able to sort of leverage AI to almost make that systematic and very, very repeatable is exciting. And it frees up a lot of bandwidth to do sort of more exciting, bigger, badder, more impactful types of efforts with the human element, the intuition, the gray area that the robot overlords just don't care about, because they are not humans. And as far as I know, they're not really sentient yet.
Not yet. I think we have time, little bit of time before that happens.
I use my manners when I talk to AI because I want right.
You know, I found myself doing the same thing. I always say please and thank you.
You don't want to be rude to the chat.
Just in case. Just hedge that bet a little bit. What other tools are you guys talking about? Because I know that there are some AI tools, you know, for video editing. There's AI tools in the advertising realm, which is actually where you guys, you know, you spend your life around the advertising side of things. Are there other tools and things being discussed?
For sure. So, you know, we did a session on AI in the newsroom, but it quickly kind of, you know, ballooned out to you know, encompass the whole, you know, an entire TV station or station group. So any of these tools can be used, you know, by the promotions department, right, or by the sales department. So again, they're great brainstorming tools. You can use them to come up with a slogan. You can use ChatGPT to help kind of digest an advertiser's, you know, website and distill it down into a couple of facts that can then be used to write a script, right? We looked at how you can use Midjourney to create images. So maybe that's a logo for an advertiser. So a lot of different applications there, and you know, ChatGPT is one of them. Blocks is doing certain things within their, you know, CMS platform. We're doing some things on our, you know, on our own platform with our advertisers.
Within our world, I guess a practical application of this is, so we're a content recommendation, a native advertising platform. We partner directly with publishers and content creators. We host JavaScript on their site, app, email, newsletter, whatever it is. And then we have a marketplace of advertisers that bid and pay on a cost per click basis to show their content on these publisher sites. So at scale, if you're an advertiser or an agency or media buying team, whatever it is, you're ultimately always split testing, you know, 10 to 20% of your sort of compartmentalized mental bandwidth should be dedicated to thinking about different ways to package up your messaging and drive more clicks into your funnel. And when it's an entirely human process, there's a very low ceiling on what can be accomplished. So we did an integration with OpenAI, and with a click of a button now, our advertisers can take the content that they've already kind of put together, image headline combinations, and the AI will spit out a bunch of different alternative versions of these ads. And we're seeing roughly 77% of the time, the AI created headlines outperform the human created headlines.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, these are all just efficiency gains. And ultimately, you are optimizing to some sort of conversion event on the back end or brand awareness, which would be someone clicking, entering the funnel, consuming a piece of content, and, you know, building that relationship with a user, removing or maximizing the level of efficiency to get the highest amount of people into that funnel, and leveraging AI to do it is a pretty intuitive and quick process within the interface of our platform. So that's kind of just the very first practical application of it that we have that's client facing currently.
Well, that's what I wanted to make sure I was hearing you right. So this is your advertising partners that yes. from their side perspective of things, when they come on, they can use this AI tool to generate their content, but to
just, yeah, it's you have 10 different headline image combos, click a button. Now I have 20, and 10 of the 20, you know, are AI generated, and the platform will just automatically sort of split test all these different variations. And as you kind of refine what's working and still driving the conversions on the back end, you can kind of hone in on the best performers and then use AI to optimize those further. I think where we really want to go and where it gets exciting is on the pure basis of web personalization and having AI kind of help inform the decision making and content selection of what users are seeing when they are on a publisher site to maximize just the relationship building piece of it and engagement and minimizing friction where it's the right piece of content to the right user in the right place at the right time. That's where I think this can, you can go really, really far down rabbit hole. You think of how much data there is to optimize and to help refine this learning. And I think we're, you know, we're in like the first pitch of the first inning.
How does that excite you guys for what you're doing? Because your job is to take that stuff that those advertising partners give you and then work with publishers and the news companies to get that into their sites and their systems for delivery. So how does all this kind of excite what you can do to get those ads out there?
Yeah, I think it's all about efficiency. So we're a heavily scaled platform and trying to comprehend, you know, making a decision to pick six pieces of content to show in a paid widget when you have millions of pieces of content to choose from. Typical, previously it's, you know, you use machine learning and big data sets. We use Thompson sampling to help with our creative selection. This is just kind of augmenting that process to make it even more efficient. And it, I don't know, self-normalizes over time to just get smarter and smarter. And I think the ultimate beneficiary of that is A, the publisher, because you can drive more engagement, better yield, better user experience. And on the user experience side, that means the user and the audiences on your sites are also benefiting here, where that fine line we walk between paid content and organic content and having something truly be interesting and discoverable to an end user, we always try to tiptoe that line and have it actually be as value added as possible to the user on the front end. I think AI has the potential to really get us closer than we've ever been as an advertising industry to accomplish that.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. And I want to ask a little bit about the technologies that you use. And I admittedly am not an expert on all of them, but taking what you just said about how AI is helping you, and then based on a conversation we had a few weeks ago when we first met and talked about you guys coming on the podcast, you mentioned something to me that was curious. You said that the era of cookies is ending. So without using cookies, which we're all used to now, right? Everybody can go to a site and you see that pop up that says, do you accept to use these? If those kind of things are going away, how are you still making sure that the right things go to the right users?
Yeah, so we actually are not that reliant on cookies as is. So our business model for the better part of the last 10 years has been heavily indexed toward performance marketing or outcome-based marketing, whatever you want to call it, which basically means I have a URL and I have context of an article, I don't know, something about the F1 race in Vegas that's coming up. Mike and I were just talking about that. You can make personalization decisions at scale based on just sort of how other audiences behave on that site, which type of content they do click on, which type of content they don't click on, how are they engaging with the messages post-click, and just drill down and use inference to maximize performance without having to necessarily harvest behavioral data. So this person was shopping for a kayak or something, and I'm using that to pick what ads go into this widget, even though they did it in some other ecosystem or some other site. It doesn't really matter too much for us. And I think that really helps insulate and provide a certain level of protection for long-term yield for these publishers, where there are enough challenges happening that publishers have to deal with and worry about what's going to happen to their content recommendation revenue through Rev Content in a cookieless world. It's, you don't need to think about that because it will probably actually scale up to be better over time.
Well, I think that is a thing I keep hearing about these technologies is that their own efficiencies improve over time.
Yeah. It's cookies are in a way a crutch, right? We've been able to lean on cookies for a very, very long period of time as an industry, and sort of I don't know, it's kind of a life hack way to recommend content to users. And we just have to be better about how we create these scalable identity solutions and maintain the highest level of utility and user experience while doing it. And I think the industry is ready for it. Everyone seems to be kind of rowing in the same direction, and cookies have felt like an archaic technology for a long time, but no one has a better idea.
Well, I think, you know, we have a habit in this industry. We will hang on to a tool for as long as possible until you make us change.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another layer of this too that we're excited about, which is just our internal recirculation. So we have more and more customers that use our platform to recirculate their own content on their web properties and mobile apps, right? So they can take one of our ad widgets and sprinkle in local content, and with AI and what we're able to do on the advertising side, and kind of we've been doing this already for a long time on the front end for a consumer, I can start to see content that is more and more germane to the content that I'm on, right? So it's relevant. So I'm on an article about the F1 race in Vegas, I'm going to see content about, the F1 race in Austin, right? Or car racing in general, or sports in general, rather than some piece of content that is, not really relevant to what I'm interested in or to what I'm looking at that moment. So we're excited to see where it can take our publishers with increasing web traffic and page views and eventually, monetization as well.
Yeah, I think people rightfully so think of us as purely a monetization play, where you put the widget on page, and for that subset of users that get to the end of the article, you can drive a monetization event through a click. But it's really important to note that you can also drive increased session depth and more engagement with users by us recommending your own organic content, whether that's from the site that they're on or some other owned and operated property, what have you. There's very much a value proposition to be had there. And you can do it in an environment where you show no paid content and the user gets to the end of the article, and we'll kind of carry the water on recommending other content you have written to keep them on site a little bit longer and drive more incrementality to your session depth. And you're going to make more revenue through your existing sort of programmatic and direct sold infrastructure through that mechanism.
That's interesting. I hadn't actually thought about using it that way, as well as just, the ad suggestions, but to push to your own content as well.
Yeah. And you can customize things at a pretty granular level. But yeah, that's sort of an afterthought people kind of forget about, but it has a very obvious practical application for most publishers online.
What is that look like? I mean, are people seeing that traffic get pushed?
Yeah. So typically what we see is somewhere between 30% and 40% increases in engagement when publishers leverage our content recirculation. So that means, if typically someone's reading 1.7 pages per session, we're going to get them closer to 2 pages per session over time. And then you'll have Rev Content be a referral source within your analytics, and you can kind of use that data, and we can toy around with different implementations on different page locations or different types of funnels, say maybe on social traffic through certain channels like Reddit or Twitter. If you want to heavily index on recirculation and remove the content rec paid experience altogether, we can customize it that way as well. So only certain subsets of users through different entry funnels will see that type of experience or integration.
Which I think just keeping people on for, more pieces, more articles or whatever is such a huge thing.
It's massive. I mean, it's been a big theme of the last, 48 hours here. It's just the fragmentation of mediums and then the fragmentation of our minds that we're, everyone is just, short attention spans, and it's hard to get their attention in the first place. It's hard to keep it. It's hard to know what platform every consumer or reader is on. And so if we can get them to dig a little bit deeper because the content is that much more relevant, or the content that we're suggesting is that much more relevant, a 30% gain is a huge win.
No, that's a giant win. I mean, because there are so many, I mean, we talk about it all the time. There are so many options to get the news, to get the information. And if we can keep you there a little bit longer,
of course,
our own sustainability increases.
And then the other piece of it too is the data insight that you get, because we're code on page. So we have a certain level of information about just your audience as a whole, and we can help inform editorial decisions based on which types of pages categorically. So, you know, whether that's sports or articles about baseball, they monetize better than articles about, I don't know, tennis or basketball. Certain organizations already have that process kind of figured out on their own, but we work with a lot of independent and smaller companies that, while they can do that, everyone's kind of fighting fires and there's always things happening all the time. So it's just one less thing to think about.
Yeah, but the easiest way for me to get that data to make my decision.
Yeah, it just comes packaged up as part of our solution. Mm-hmm. And if you see that insight and it's useful to you and you can kind of make a subset of decisions a little bit differently because of that, then great. Otherwise, it's there if you need it.
Yeah, I like that you're talking about packaging that data in there, because I like all of the data in the world is out there. But I think for most of us, it just gets so overwhelming and you don't know which nuggets to pull.
Yep.
And to use to your advantage. It can get a little hard.
It's another application for AI, right? Feed in a bunch of data spreadsheets and tell me what's the most relevant thing here to look at. So that's something we talked about a little bit yesterday too.
Yeah, decision fatigue is very real. So minimizing the amount of decisions any one person or group of people make in a day, if we can help with that, then great. And I think AI can certainly help with that in a very, very impactful way.
Yeah, I agree. I want to touch on one other thing that you guys brought up in the very beginning today, that you, when you were talking about kind of the hot topics at your summit, you mentioned recruiting. And I think that's interesting to me. And I was just talking to someone in the HR field, and they were telling me, you know, the problem is no one's really out to hire anymore. It's, you're always recruiting. It's like you're always that Division I football coach where you've got to be out selling your place of business as the place they need to come work for. That it's recruiting, it's not hiring.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think what we learned, and we can't take the credit for the session, it was all Tony Bangert, you know, from Blox Digital's brainchild, and brought in a guest speaker, Julian Pacino, who took us through a guided session. But it was fantastic. It's on all of our minds. It was relevant to the local TV groups that, you know, have one or two stations, to the larger medium sized groups, to, you know, we have a, you know, our tech companies that were there. It is 100% an ongoing process. Always be recruiting. It's one of the things we learned was that, you know, you need to be, even when you're not hiring, you need to be asking people, hey, what would it take you to come work for us? Are you interested in coming to work for us? One and two, you know, what is your company's value proposition? Why should somebody come work for you? Right.
Right.
Everybody within the company needs to know that. And most companies maybe haven't thought about it, or management's idea of it might be different than what the average, you know, worker's idea of it is. So it's an exercise that you need to undertake to kind of go back to your employees and, you know, why do you work here? What makes you want to work here? And why would anybody else come to work here? I think it's important.
Yeah, I think being more deliberate about asking those questions that are probably, those concepts are taken for granted on a day-to-day basis. That's a big takeaway for me for sure on the, what is it, employer value proposition?
Yeah, yeah, EVP.
Employee value proposition. Yeah. I think about it every day, but it's sort of subconscious. And having that be ingrained into the culture of all of our hiring managers and our staff is a takeaway I have from this for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a big, I don't know if culture shift is the right way. Maybe mind shift is the better way to say it. A big mind shift in how we think about what we offer employees and how we bring in new employees. It's not just about the package you put together or the, you know, the awesome break room, right? It's how you think right about the company and how you treat each other.
Yeah, those things have become commoditized a little bit. And, you know, we looked at some examples of, you know, one company, you know, their value proposition was just kind of speed to release that, you know, if you're on the dev side, a technology, you know, you're a coder, right? You can put out code that is immediately adopted and used in the local community. So you get to see the immediate impact of that, right? Instead of kind of having to wait weeks or months for a release and beta testing and everything else. So that was their value proposition, right? So every company has one or should have one. And yeah, the ping pong tables and cool break rooms, it's like, it's become a little bit of a cliche. It's like, or if anybody's even going into the office, right? For some right. companies, that's not the draw necessarily anymore.
Although I'm a strong proponent of ping pong tables. I think there should always be ping pong tables around.
Agreed. Yeah. There's one right down the hall here.
There you go. Well, guys, as we wrap up, I do want to offer you the opportunity. If people want to know more about Rev Content, know more about what you guys are doing, how can they follow along with you? How can they contact you?
Yeah, so revcontent.com, we're on LinkedIn, but easy enough, it's richard@revcontent.com, you know, spelled just like it sounds, R-E-V, like victory, content.com.
Rev as in revenue, content as in content.
Yeah.
Rev Content. What a name.
Well, look, if there's a theme of the last almost 30 episodes that we've done of this podcast, it's that those two things go a lot closer together than we were told 20 years ago.
Finding the balance is kind of our mission, and empowering publishers to be able to walk that line where the editorial and product people are very, very happy, and the CFOs, the CROs, and the revenue folks are also very happy. And then most importantly, the audience just doesn't even know that it's really there.
Right. And,
you know, the content is free because publishers are thriving and, you know, monetizing the inventory in a way that provides long-term stability and opportunity for scalable growth.
Well, that's the dream for all of us.
That's what we're trying to do.
Well, Mike, Richard, I appreciate you guys taking some time today. I think this was good conversation, very timely stuff, I think, for us to be talking about. You know, as you said in the beginning, AI is the thing that everyone's talking about. So it was nice to hear that you guys were taking part in those conversations in a summit of everybody in the industry.
Yeah.
Love doing it. Yeah.
It's good to see people taking it seriously, and that sort of like level of intimidation is slowly but surely kind of going away, and people are starting to actually apply these concepts operationally on a day-to-day basis within their organizations. I think that's really exciting.
It is. Well, thanks again, guys. I appreciate it. That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time.
Thanks for having us on, Nick.
Thank you.
Yep.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.